Good morning, everyone. Welcome to NSPS Radio Hour. We have a really interesting, exciting show today. I have with me some people that I think our audience will recognize. I have Jeff Lucas. Welcome, Jeff.
Oh, thank you, Kurt. I enjoy being here.
I have Bob Zierman. Some will remember him as Robert. I referred to him as Robert last time. But welcome back, Bob.
Thank you so much, Kurt.
And I have Gary Kent. Oh, Kurt. Welcome, Gary. We're going to have an interesting discussion today, and it's sort of a follow-on to some of the things that we've talked about in the past, but I think I shared with you guys a message I received the other day after this show was announced. I'd been talking to a gentleman in Arizona about contracts and a number of other things related to what surveyors do, and when he saw the announcement for today's show, he wrote back to me and said something to the effect that the discussion with the three of you today is the most important practice modification that will help secure the future role of professional land surveyors in American society. I thought that was a pretty profound statement considering what we're talking about today to have such importance, but I think you three will agree that that's true. We all know that our profession is where it is, and most people, I think, understand where that is, but in terms of securing our role in American society, I think what we're talking about today is important. And for that matter, we've had some discussions about the topic for today, but I thought it might be a good idea as we begin to just spend a few minutes, and I don't know who wants to start the discussion, but anybody's welcome to do that, with just sort of a little outline of what we're going to discuss today.
Well, Kurt, this is Jeff. I'll chime in. I think that what we need to be discussing, and I hear the conversation changing, at least I have over the past few years, is we need to talk about an outline for, or maybe, as you put it, a practice model moving forward for the land surveying profession. You know, we have several issues ahead of us that we need to address in order to remain relevant into the 21st century, not the least of which is how are we going to attract young people into this profession. And the thing that's going to drive that, I think, and to a large extent, is going to be the technology that's going to be available. I mean, how cool is it to be able to fly drones around and play with radio-controlled boats, you know, to do what we need to do or that we have traditionally done. But with that technology, I think, comes it's a double-edged sword. As I've said on many occasions, I mean, what is it that we do as land surveyors that can't be done by someone else with the right tools, the right technology, and that's happening right now. And so... how do we as a profession, how do we as land surveyors moving forward stay relevant with the changes that are ahead of us?
Very true. Gary or Bob, you want to participate in that or just want to start talking about our topics?
And then let Gary kind of follow on and encapsulate. But the idea that I see within what Jeff just spoke about is looking at how technology can be leveraged for the use of the surveyors, but ultimately identifying that surveyors are the ones that are in the position to make the final judgment calls, and in so doing, maybe even look at getting up above the level of just, hey, here's the dimensions that we're looking at on the ground, and this is where. Gary was speaking very recently out here in Washington about the difference between the where of boundary lines and property corners and the what. What do they signify? And the area that I think that surveyors should be able to move ahead into, ideally, would be to help identifying what that means so that they can damp down conflict before it erupts between neighbors.
Yeah, and this is Gary, and I guess I suppose to some extent the particular interest I've got in this, or the particular focus, would be on, first off, to some extent, the way surveyors write contracts. In fact, a lot of surveyors don't write contracts at all, but they need to start, and this is perhaps a good reason to start doing that. Secondly, are there statutes or administrative rules that need to be looked at in order to give surveyors a little confidence in some things that they might want to do in this area without treading dangerously into what might be the practice of law? And as what Bob said when we were in Washington, some mention of the Supreme Court rules, or, you know, rules of, I don't want to say rules of evidence or rules of civil procedure, but perhaps to some extent something in that realm where the courts outline, you know, what a surveyor, what attorneys or what other people can do, which is what's happened to some extent in Washington, not with surveyors, but along those lines.
Right, and when you're talking about Washington, of course, you're talking about the state of Washington, so our audience isn't confused and thinking this is some national thing that's going on in D.C.
Correct, yes.
And what I find really compelling about all this is everything that you all have mentioned here. What really hit home with that to me was something Jeff said, and then what both Gary and Bob said sort of backs that up, and that is the part about attracting young people. And what are we going to do that is exciting, if that's the right word, but meaningful maybe is a better word.
Yeah, and Kurt, excuse me, this is Jeff again. I think, and I may have mentioned this last time we were on the program with Gary and Bob, but I think we need to look to our past to a certain extent to help guide our way into the future. I mean, if you look at guys like Hodgman out of Michigan and Mulford out of New York, they saw their role as a surveyor as significantly different than the way the surveyor's role has been seen over the past, I'd say, you know, decades, if not half a century. You know, if you read Mulford's little treatise, Landmarks and Boundaries, and you read what he was doing when he ran into problems, is he was, in essence, a mediator. Hodgman talked about mediating, and that the surveyor's job is to, at least that portion of surveying that requires licensure. And I want to, you know, I want to make a distinction here if I can. I understand, and we all understand, that technology is changing and that a lot of people have availability to that technology. You know, there was a point in time when there were some land surveyors who wanted to regulate who could use GPS, for instance, you know, and then, of course, that's the flea trying to wag the dog's tail. Because you know, there's no way that will ever happen or would have ever happened. But the distinction I want to make is, and sorry, I don't want to go down too many rabbit trails, is the basic reason that we're licensed and regulated is because of our nexus, our connection with property location issues, which Bob brought up and Gary's talked about. There is a difference between what the property is and where it's located, and that's our job. That's the reason we're regulated, the only reason we're regulated. So if we look to the past, what surveyors did in the past and how surveyors operated in the past, I think it gives us some insight into some of the changes that I believe we need to make moving into the future.
Yeah, I think sometimes people, and we hear this all the time, we're folks tend to focus on the technical part of what we do, if that's the right terminology, in terms of providing information based on our work, and then not going beyond that. Just say, okay, here it is, do with it whatever you will. And I'm hearing you all say that it's important for us to, as I think Jeff just said, get back to our roots, so to speak.
Well, that practice model has to stop. I mean, we can't just be problem finders, and you know, we've discussed this before. If all we can do is find people's problems, then eventually we will be the problem, and society will move on without us. And, you know, some of the problems facing us here, obviously, are numbers. Even if we don't become irrelevant, land surveying, traditional land surveying as we know it, if it doesn't become irrelevant, our numbers could get so small that we will, in fact, become irrelevant because society will have to move on. They will have to get these traditional services that land surveyors have provided. They're going to have to get them from other sources. And there are plenty of people out there willing to provide those services, who aren't licensed land surveyors.
Yeah, that's certainly one thing we've learned over the last decades is that the void will be filled. Absolutely will be filled.
You know, I was going to kind of follow up with a different analogy, if I could, Kurt. And that was something that kind of came to me the other day, that surveyors in this whole process can be likened to the first responders in the real property resolution process, and you know, come up that chain, you know, and so it's really this is a discussion that Gary and you and Jeff and I have been looking at, but surveyors are already on the ground. They see what the problems are. They probably understand it much better than, you know, the vast majority of attorneys, especially those that don't have any normal work in real estate law. And so, you know, analogizing to first responders, you know, imagine
I hate to interrupt, Bob, but we're at our first break, so we'll come right back and pick up on that when we come back.
Attention, surveyors. Are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with International Mine Action Programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back on today's NSPS Radio Hour with Bob Zierman, Jeff Lucas, and Gary Kemp. Before I had to interrupt Bob going into the break, he was talking about an analogy, surveyors being like first responders and seeing and understanding problems before anyone else. What brought that to mind, but I want you to get back to that discussion, but what that brought into my mind was, what do first responders do when they see a problem? Do they stop and say, oh, gosh, I guess I better go over and call the doctor? what they do is they address the problem.
Yeah, they get in there and they staunch the blood and, you know, triage things and get them packed up and over to the doctors who then are able to tidy things up. But at least they get things done quick. And I guess the question that I'm trying to draw by this analogy is, where does the appropriate level of legal work in this area leave off, and surveyors should be able to do their job? I mean, it would be both economically unfeasible and politically unacceptable for first responders to be precluded from doing their jobs because it would otherwise be construed as the practice of medicine. If doctors begrudge them of that, it just simply wouldn't work. Well, I think what we have with surveyors and real estate lawyers is a process that should be worked out that more seamlessly identifies how that division of labor should be appropriated.
Yeah, I guess one of the things that brings to mind, and maybe Gary and Jeff can pitch in on this too, but in the case of the surveyor, I'll start to say it's not life and death. I guess it could be. People get a little excited about their land sometimes. but from the surveyor's perspective, who is most of the close to the situation? Because what typically happens in the legal setting is it's pretty far removed from what happens when the surveyor is there and when everything's fresh in everybody's mind and have to get people up to speed, so to speak. So I guess I'm just kind of interested in y'all's perspectives about that in terms of how much does the part about being the surveyor being there and addressing the issue as it comes up and understanding what those issues are. Of course, as Bob pointed out, not going further than is allowed by law or should be. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, this is Gary. I a meeting that Bob and I were at a couple weeks ago, a week or two ago, was interesting because we had a very experienced, knowledgeable title person there, which respected title person, and Bob will remember his comment was he had much more faith in surveyors, properly resolving boundary types of issues than he did in judges and attorneys. That kind of goes along with the theme that Kurt, you probably remember from years ago, which was an interesting study that ACSM had commissioned probably, 25, 30 years ago, that showed that our clients generally looked more favorably upon us than what we did.
Oh, yes. So, yeah, there's that, and that remains to be true, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I'd like to chime in there, too, because it has been my observation that this area of the law, boundary surveying, boundary law, is a pretty niche area of the law, and it's been this is no knock on attorneys. It's just been my observation that they have to be brought up to speed on a lot of the issues that are involved, and most surveyors, most surveyors right now, even without additional training, understand the issues, I think, a lot better than any attorney you might run into at a cocktail party somewhere. That's not to say there aren't attorneys and there aren't judges who understand this area of the law very well, but this is why I think Bob's analogy is great. I mean, we're the first ones on the scene. I've talked about this before myself. We're the first ones on the scene. Who is in a better position to work these things out than the land surveyor? And my just thumbnail rule of thumb, let me put it that way, of where's the line between practicing surveying and practicing the law, if you read most statutes that set up the practice of law, it generally boils down to representation, paid representation. So when you start advocating for one side or the other, in my mind, you're starting to step over the line as a land surveyor. The land surveyor should truly be a totally disinterested third party, but here's a problem. I got a client that's paying me money to come out and survey his property. But by the same, so there's always going to be that push. There's always going to be that pressure to a certain extent to get your, and it's just nature, I think, to get your client the best result possible. But the moment you step over that line, and this is just my thumb, rule of thumb. Once you step over that line into advocacy, now you're stepping dangerously close to the practice of law, especially if you're getting paid for this advocacy, because that is the definition of a lawyer, a paid advocate for their clients. They get paid to represent others. That's the definition of a lawyer.
And on that score, what I find in my practice, because boundary dispute law, I call it a nano niche, so you're exactly right, Jeff, about it being a small little area of the law, but if you're going to do the best by your client, you also have to do the best by the opposing party, and sometimes it means putting the choke chain on the opposing party's attorney, to be quite honest. And there's a few tricks that I use, one of which is to point out that under the rules of professional conduct for lawyers, the work that you're doing and charging for ought not to exceed, at least to great extent, that which you're fighting over. And unfortunately, for those few blades of grass, a lot of people are willing to throw good money after bad. It is absolutely unreasonable. And so, getting them to the point that they can get past the fight that's down in the limbic system, and start using their rational brain, the prefrontal cortex, again, is really critical. And if you can, if surveyors are in a position to kind of damp that down and say, well, here, there are other ways that we can work around this. We've got, there's a ton of different areas. There's quitclaim, there's lease, there's license, there's reversionary interests, easements, boundary line agreements or adjustments. We don't have to kill each other over, or you guys don't have to kill each other over, where that line is. I mean, that's a real service to probably about 85-90% of the population who can't otherwise get into the blood sport of boundary line litigation.
Well, and they're in, again, I'm not knocking the legal profession. I'm part of it, okay, and I'm not knocking attorneys, but it's been my observation that something that's pretty minor or could be fixed relatively quickly or relatively cheaply, and when you go to the legal profession with this thing, they, since they don't understand property law as well as the surveyor, or just don't understand property law, the immediate reaction is, we've got to litigate. So they take what could be a minor cut or laceration, to stay with the medical analogy here, and they turn it into heart surgery, because, spending tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars over something that could have been fixed for a fraction of the cost, if the surveyors were in a position to provide those fixes. And, and again, without stepping over that line between the practice of surveying and the practice of the law.
For Gary and Bob, or Gary and Jeff, I guess, going back to what Bob was saying and then Jeff just followed up with, I think actually Jeff may have even started this line of thought, but it's always been my impression, I know certainly I've always felt that way as a surveyor, that you were talking about who you work for and, you're getting paid and being an advocate and whatever. I think most surveyors, although they're getting paid by one party, they don't look at themselves as beholden to that party in terms of making proper decisions. I think surveyors, by and large, realize that they're trying to get to the right resolution of whatever the issue is. And with that mindset, I'm interested in your thoughts about that, but to me it puts us in a good frame of mind to carry on this work we're talking about.
Yeah, you know, surveyors are not supposed to be advocates for our clients. I mean, you know, if we were, we'd go to the client and say, hey, where would you like that boundary line? You know, so I do think it puts us in a good position. Although, you know, I think part of that is the contract issue I talked about earlier, because clients, I think that we are supposed to be their advocate, and they also, you know, one of the biggest problems I think that we have is that they also think that we're telling them what they own, and I think that's probably 100% of the time outside the realm of a ALGA CSM land title survey. Clients think that surveyors tell people what they own, so, you know, part of that or that probably has to be somehow addressed. Not that you have to have a conversation with a client, but you have to understand that's what they think you're doing. And so with that in mind, you know, then I think you can help guide people to the right, you know, to the right place.
Yeah, and I brought up advocacy because in my mind that's the difference. That's when you're crossing the line, when you are advocating for your client. Actually, I feel that surveyors, they should be advocates. They should be advocates for the true boundary line. We should be advocates for the boundary line, not for our client or for the next door neighbor. After all, we were left in charge after the, especially in the public domain states, after the GLO surveyors left, they left the framework in charge of the local surveyor. We are stewards, rightly seen, land surveyors are stewards of the nation's property boundaries. Therefore, our advocacy should be the property boundary wherever that may be. And Gary's absolutely right. When you wrap that pink flagging around that iron, people they think that you're telling them what you own.
That's right. Well, we got to go to another break here, and we'll come back and pick up on this and then talk about how we get to where we think we ought to go. Let's go to break.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to our audience today, and it's time of our show today to do our question of the day, sponsored by our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes, the Quick Stakes contest. As our longtime listeners know, we ask our guest or guests a question, and the answer to that question is to be sent in by email to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com. to win the gift from our sponsor today. And actually, Jeff, I'm going to come back to you because you just said something that is very, very important that everybody in this group agrees with, and that was, what should the surveyor's true advocacy be toward? What are we trying to advocate, be an advocate for?
The property line. The boundary
true, line. The true boundary line.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's a, I don't know what I'm hearing. Are you guys hearing something crazy?
Yeah, I was hearing a buzzing. I thought maybe I got the wrong answer, Kurt.
That did sound, it sounded exactly like one,
wrong answer.
One of those buzzers on the TV show. be pretty bad if you give a wrong answer to your own question.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just going to say that. I'd like to follow up on that line of thought, though, because you were talking about that as we were going to break.
Yeah.
Being stewards.
Yeah, being stewards of the nation's property matter. You know, I suggested in an article a few months back a new practice model. You know, we adopted, somehow we jettisoned the old practice model of find the problems, mediate them, and correct them, and leave people, you know, in peace. I suggested a new practice model that would work, and Gary's going to hate me for this, okay? He hates this word, this term. It would work either for the deed staker or the fence line surveyor. It doesn't matter how you operate. If you could be the greatest deed staker in the world, slapping that math on the ground with high precision, or you could be the greatest fence line surveyor, never made a measurement in your life, and this practice model would work in either situation. And just briefly, I won't take up too much time with this, but it's been my observation, when you go to the field, there is a status quo, generally speaking. I mean, there are problems. You go to the field, yeah, there are problems. But in my practice, 90 to 95% of the time, there is a status quo. Moving forward, as stewards of the nation's property boundaries, our mantra should be maintaining the status quo. Whatever we have to do to maintain the status quo. And if we just maintain the status quo, we would have a 90% success rate. If success is measured by correct results, we would have a 90% success rate. Well, here's how it would work. You go to the field, you've been asked to do a survey, and there are a lot of contract issues here that will allow this to happen, but you go to the field, you do your normal survey. Doesn't matter what stripe you are, deed staker, fence line surveyor, somebody in between. You finish your survey or your analysis of the data and the evidence, and you decide for whatever reason you need to upset the status quo. You need to go drive in a new iron or whatever it is. Hold the fence, even though the fence doesn't represent the status quo. At that point, you then consult all of the boundary location doctrines and see if any of them apply. If they don't and you still want to upset the apple cart, you still are going to insist upon upsetting the status quo, then you have to go to your client. Before you do, before you drive the iron, before you wrap that pink flagging in a different place from where the people on the ground think the property lines already exist, you go to your client and you explain to your client that why you need to upset the apple cart. And then you explain to your client it's going to obviously affect the next door neighbor, so we have to have a conference between the two affected parties. So you have a conference with these two affected parties, and you explain to them why it is that you need to upset the status quo. One of three things will happen. They will agree with you. If they agree with you, then your job becomes to memorialize that agreement. They're going to disagree with you. Then they want to maintain the status quo. Then your job becomes to memorialize the status quo. Or they tell you to go away. And if they tell you to go away, you go away. You don't do anything. No harm, no foul. Doesn't mean you're not going to get paid. That's a contract issue. But we would if that were our practice model, number one, I think that 99% of the time, the surveyor would never find a reason to have a conference. They, or not, at least 90% of the time, the surveyor would decide, you know what, maybe I don't need to upset the status quo. Besides all of that, I'd have to have a conference with these people. I don't want to have a conference with these people. So he maintains, the surveyor maintains the status quo. That would give us a 90% success rate if we measure success by correct outcome.
So if I'm understanding, I want to get Gary's opinion on this, obviously, but I'm understanding you correctly. You're saying you're not saying you're an advocate for the deed staker. You're not an advocate for the fence line surveyor. You're not an advocate for procedure.
No.
You're an advocate for a solution.
Correct.
Gary?
Yeah. Jeff joked about the term deed staker, and he even said after what he's talking about when he uses that term is the person who just takes the math and puts it on the ground, you know, and ignores everything else. So,
right.
And in fact, I think, Jeff, you have even said in the past that if you want to get right down to it, deed staking is in fact the correct thing to be doing, at least as far as trying to determine where the boundaries are in that scope of things. But I guess I would look at it, or I would have just a slightly different take on it than Jeff does, and maybe I don't think we disagree on this, but just to clarify something, and that is that the boundary doctrines, I think, that he's talking about would be those that do not require a legal determination. You know, we need to kind of mine all the possibilities. You know, for example, one of the places I think surveyors go wrong frequently is, you know, the deeds are unclear, the evidence is unclear, and so we concoct up some kind of solution based on vague evidence and ambiguous evidence. We come up with a solution, and we look at it and say, wow, look at that, the fence is 5 feet away. Oh, well. And what we ought to be doing is looking at the fence and saying, well, you know, maybe that's better evidence than all of this ambiguity. You know, let me create some geometric solution based on some rather arbitrary interpretations of things. I think surveyors do that a lot. And what we ought to be doing is saying, well, you know, the ambiguities in all the evidence actually allows me to make a determination that the fence may be the best evidence rather than these arbitrary decisions that I'm making. So I think in that context, yeah, there are absolutely a lot of times that surveyors could come up with a solution that is defensible and proper. But we get hung up on, you know, it's hard to explain that to some extent. Like, well, let's see, I held the fence because why? You know, versus, well, I split this thing out and I used the geometry here and missed the fence by 9 feet, but oh well. And I think that's probably what a lot of what Jeff's talking about, and I totally agree with that. Why would we do things? It's what Justice Cooley said. You know, why would we do these things and make these arbitrary decisions when it upsets the neighborhood?
Yeah, and I agree, Gary. Actually, what we need to be doing, Kurt, what the surveyor needs to be doing is interpreting the deed, okay, and stake the deed. Well, if the vast majority of our work is at this point in time is retracement work as opposed to original work, then there's no staking involved. You're just accepting what the deed calls for. And ambiguities are the key to this. If the deed is ambiguous, if there's ambiguities in the deed or in the extrinsic evidence when you go to the field, then these boundary establishment doctrines start to kick in. Acquiescence is not only a boundary establishment doctrine, it's an evidentiary tool. You know, the fences have been there for 100 years. The new breakdown of the section says the fences are 10, 15, 20 feet off. What makes that new breakdown of the section better than the fence that's been there 100 years? And if you had to go explain that, just imagine, Kurt, having to go explain that to two property owners. I mean, if that were the practice model, that's what I have to do in order to, pass muster under the statute or under the standard of practice. you know what? I got into surveying so that I didn't have to deal with people, okay? I'm going to find every way I can to hold and maintain the status quo without having to have a conference. And I just imagine most surveyors would probably turn to the extrinsic evidence and trying to doing everything they can to maintain the status quo, if for no other reason, so they don't have to have a conference with the adjoiners.
Oh, by the way, did you guys see that recent picture that was getting farmed around of not three irons sitting close together, but three concrete markers with disc in them? That one came around last week sometime, and of course we all laugh about those when they come around, but they really get to the point of what we're talking about here, and I know we got to go to break here in a couple of minutes, and I want to get to, in our last segment, talk about, okay, how do we get from here to there, so to speak? But I guess one of the things in this discussion, do we need to have any conversation about title, or maybe we've already done that, difference in title and boundary, and what our obligations are in terms of what our job is regarded to those two things?
Well, yeah, go ahead. Somebody else. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it is an important topic because surveyors need to understand that line very carefully and in order to I don't want to say not cross it, but to just be able to put all of the problems in context, the things that they have discovered in the field. Let me put them in context, you know, because a junior-senior relationship, a conflict, a junior-senior conflict, is in fact a title problem. It is not a survey problem. But that does not preclude the surveyor from doing what Jeff and what we're all suggesting, which is, well, let's work with that. Let's try and get the people together and mediate it. And I think that, you know, and maybe after break we can talk for a few minutes about the unwritten rights issue. Jeff mentioned acquiescence, and we've got adverse possession, we got parole agreements, and we got estoppel that are all title determinations, not boundary determinations. But if we can look at those and think there's a probability or possibility that something has operated, and then possibly get the owners in a conference to agree to that line that was perfectly fine until we showed up.
Let's go to that last break, and we'll pick up on that when we come back.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back for our last segment for today with Bob Zierman, Jeff Lucas, and Gary Kent. We've been talking about where surveyors where the surveying profession may go in the future and perhaps where it needs to go in the future in terms of getting back to our roots for one thing, others in setting a specific niche for ourselves, or actually focusing on that that unique nature of what we do. And I know, Bob, you've been doing a lot of work out in your state of Washington, and you've had conversations with the other two guys on the show and me and a lot of other people on the how part of this. You know, I think the people talking on the show today all agree this is something that ought to be done, but you've actually been working on the how.
Well, I've been trying to. So there's a few different things that we've been speaking about, and they're balls in the air right now. One that I think is worthwhile to consider, you know, and that could probably be implemented fairly soon, would be getting some sort of a brochure, like Ken Cloak said, that you can pass out at the very least, that indicates, like Gary said, what we're doing here is identifying title lines or your corners per title, not your boundary. There's a distinction of that, you know, and something that specifies what that means. I think that's kind of like looking at the Fosbury flop model. That would be the lowest level of the bar to try to start solving these problems. The second one, and this was a idea that Gary actually had, was to try to develop some body of fence law so that when people go out or go and try to put up a fence, they're in communication with their neighbors and decide how that fence should be erected so that that they know, hey, 10 years, that's adverse possession out here in Washington, or whatever it is in anyone else's particular state, that's very likely or in fact will become the title boundary line going forward. So either get it right up front by getting your survey done, or you're essentially acquiescing to a new line. Let's see. Another idea that we were thinking about is trying to get mediation moving forward, and if not, a mandatory arbitration, and the idea on that was pretty specific as to a lot of these courts, or many courts, they really don't like boundary dispute law. It's kind of a waste of their time. Again, it's just a few blades of grass as far as they're concerned. They don't know why these people are wasting their time, and they're just going to make some kind of a decision and get them out of there, you know, out in front of them and move on to the next case. Whereas if it was going to mandatory arbitration, the market is going to identify some, you know, create and then identify people that actually know what this area of the law is all about. People are going to go to those folks and try to get their problems resolved in the event that they can't get it solved up front through a more of a mediation-type approach. And then if that in turn fails, then jurisdiction would be ultimately to the courts. But, you know, having those kind of stopgaps that normally lawyers put in place for contracts, you know, going forward, in my opinion, should be the de facto law or placed in the law currently for trying to put in these various speed bumps to stop people from getting fisticuffs with each other.
So in terms of getting the surveyor to the point of comfort, if that's the right word, in terms of accepting this responsibility or expanding upon the surveyor's role of what, typically seems to be understood among surveyors today. Is that an educational process, a certification process? Is it, as Jeff pointed out, surveyors in many cases are acting in this capacity to some degree. So what can society do? What can people like NSPS do, or what can we collectively as surveyors do? I don't know who wants to tackle that first. But.
Well, I think it's, you know, I hear what Bob's saying, and I've read his emails, and the biggest problem with that is Bob and the people he's talking with in Washington might get Washington fixed, but what about the other 49 jurisdictions? I have a sense of urgency. I think we could legislate some fixes that would solve some of our problems that we have. And our biggest problem is we have two levels of services called by the same name. In the medical analogy, I've made this analogy before. One surveyor, you can amputate the wrong leg in the land surveying profession, and there's no ramifications because by and large, and I know there's exceptions to this, and Gary's pointed some of them out, but by and large, our standards of practice do not differentiate between good practice and bad. As long as you have a good closure, you're good to go. It doesn't matter if you amputate the wrong leg as long as you do it with precision. So I think it's got to come from NSPS. I think we should, I've thrown out an example of a practice model that I think we should look at or other practice models. But one thing that we have to do, at least in my opinion, Kurt, is we have to jettison the current practice model. It's not working. It's causing more problems than it solves. And just from my anecdotal evidence, we have about a 50% success rate. From what I've seen, what I've read, what I hear, you got about a 50-50 chance that you're going to get a surveyor who's going to come out there and actually attempt to relocate or reestablish or locate where the boundary lines have already become established on the ground, as opposed to simply putting the math from the deed on the ground and generating problems. Every time I go out and survey, I expect to find a pincushion, multiple monuments representing one corner in legal contemplation. And that is a travesty for a profession that is supposed to be protecting the nation's property boundaries, not upsetting them.
Yeah, which I get, that kind of lends itself to what you were saying about the leadership part, because if it doesn't come from there, at least putting out an outline of how to proceed. I mean, obviously, NSPS doesn't tell state legislators or anybody like that to blow, but I understand what you're saying. It's almost like a model law. I hate using that term, but that's kind of what you're talking about.
A practice standard.
There you go.
Yeah,
and you know, I don't disagree with that at all. I think that the things that Bob's talking about and the things that we've talked about in Washington would improve the prospects for that sort of thing, give some surveyors comfort. We even talked in the meeting that we had about, you know, that very thin line between, we've already been talking about, the advocacy for the boundary and the advocacy for the, you know, having a conference and saying, well, you know, I think this because this, wow, you know, I might have just stepped into the practice of law. But I see both sides here, and I totally agree with Jeff. I mean, there is no reason we can't have promote a practice model that encourages surveyors to move ahead with this, but I also think it's important and would be very beneficial to have some, essentially some legal backing that would even promote that even further and maybe allow surveyors even more leeway on that sort of thing. So I think, to me, it's kind of a two-pronged approach. I understand the urgency from the profession standpoint, but there's no reason that, you know, that we couldn't come up with things like model laws or, you know, as Bob talked about, model fence laws or, you know, whatever that might help along the way.
And a third prong, Gary, is education. a program put to, at the NSPS level, a program, it'd be, have to be more than one day. It might even be two or three or even 4 days. I took the ADO, American Bar's alternative dispute resolution course, and that course alone was 20 hours, and you know, to get certified and get on the state bar's mediation roster. So just teaching surveyors how to here's our practice model, and in this model we do this, and part of that is going to be mediation. You know, there's got to be training. Surveyors are going to have to learn mediation techniques and when to apply them, how to apply them, when to walk away. You know, if you can't solve every, you're not going to be able to solve everybody's problems. There comes a point in time you have to walk away. But I think we need to be doing a better job of trying.
I think also too, to reconcile both what you're saying, Gary and Jeff. It is a push-pull model. You know, you got to try to, at the legislative level, or make that space. But on the other hand, what you're saying, that's predominantly what Gary was speaking to, I believe. But Jeff, what I see you talking to is probably the first push at an overarching level is to give a shield of a collective enterprise at the NSPS level of education. I think you're exactly right about that. What is it that can be done to help reconcile these types of problems and to elevate the educational standing of surveyors to resolve the problems for that end?
We're at the end of our time here. I'm sorry that we're going to have to do that. I want to thank you all for being with me, and we'll discuss this further, I know. But I think what we've done today is at least laid down an idea for NSPS to begin to pursue, as you said, Jeff, this educational process and maybe model practice standards. And in my mind, it could go beyond people who are already licensed, but as a good model to help mentor those coming after they get their formal education and before they go into practice. So, but thank you all for being with me today. It's been great having you, and I know the audience always loves having you guys on the show. So I'm sure we'll pick up on this topic again as we go further, but thanks so much.
Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you, Kurt.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.